Lake Effect continues now on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Bonnie North. It's January, and that means one thing. Nick Petrie is releasing the newest book in his Peter Ashe series. The Wild One takes our intrepid protagonist, a Milwaukee native and veteran of the Iraq War who suffers from PTSD, far from his Wisconsin home, and sets him up in an inhospitable yet beautiful place. Like in all of Petrie's books, the mystery Ashe is trying to solve is compelling, the characters sharply drawn, and the pace relentless. The Wild One will be released on January 14th with a launch at Boswell Book Company the night of the 13th. I'll be talking with Nick at Boswell that evening, but ahead of that, I asked him to come into the studio to give us a preview.
In The Wild One, Peter goes to Iceland to find a young boy whose mother has been murdered by the boy's father. So he's sent on sort of a mission of mercy, but when Peter gets off the plane in Reykjavik, a man from the U.S. Embassy, for reasons unknown and unofficial, wants Peter sent home. And so in order to find the boy and catch a killer, Peter has to outwit and outfight and outlast the Icelandic cops, the boy's Icelandic family, and the largest winter storm Iceland has seen in a generation.
Just to add one more thing
to,
to give him something else to fight against. And I have to say, he's doing this by himself. He's kind of on his own on this one.
He is. Every book, I sort of give myself an assignment. And and part of the assignment for this one was to put Peter, is to really sort of isolate him and to make him as miserable as I possibly could, to see how deep he could dig and how much trouble he could get into and get out of.
Did he surprise you at all?
Yeah. This book was a very, it was a very interesting process in writing this book. I had never really planned to write anything set in Iceland. I got sort of talked into an Icelandic backpacking trip by my son about 2.5 years ago. And we went on this grand adventure. We went hiking across the Hornstrandir Nature Reserve, 5 days sort of crisscrossing, you know, from one side of the peninsula to the other. We got dropped off by a boat. We got picked up by a boat. There's no road access. It was this incredibly sort of isolated and beautiful and kind of scary place.
Sounds fantastic.
It was one of the peak experiences of my life was this trip with my son. But in the airport, waiting to get on our plane, the book sort of appeared in my head in all of a piece, which has never happened to me before. And I spent the next, you know, year and a half sort of trying to excavate it and turn it into a book.
I'm just trying to imagine like the entire book just sort of dropping into your head and then the process of trying to like remember all the pieces.
Well, so I got about 20 minutes of clarity where I really could see all the pieces, all the moving parts. The characters really all kind of showed up and I have a little notebook I carry with me everywhere I go and I scribbled as fast as I could, sort of trying to capture as much as I could, and then it disappeared again. It's like trying to reconstruct some lost document on the basis of the scrawlings of a madman.
In the middle of the Reykjavik airport.
Yes, in the middle of the Reykjavik airport. After 11 days of hiking and staying up all night, because we went during the summer when
there is no dark.
There really is no dark,
yeah.
Which is a whole different thing.
Yeah, because the book is set in the winter where there is no light, essentially.
Right.
And you, have maybe 2 or 3 hours in the middle of the day?
Yeah, and it depends on the weather. If it's clear, you get more light. If it's overcast or the clouds are, you know, right above the top of your head, which often happens in Iceland, you know, it really kind of never gets light at all. So, and that was sort of part of the atmosphere I was trying to create. This is every book I don't really know this at the time, but I'm trying to riff on something or another. I wrote a book set in Denver about the cannabis industry that turned out to be kind of a Western novel in a way. And this one is, you know, sort of half Private Eye novel and half sort of Scandinavian noir.
I was going to say Scandinavian noir thriller.
I'll take that.
Because it's got that feel. I feel like I'm, you know, in the middle of, you know, some sort of Swedish television show. Except it's Icelandic. But yeah, it's that sense. And one of the things I noticed, because of course you and I have talked about, I think, all of your books, and I've certainly read them all, I notice the way you talk about Iceland. It's another character.
Well, I'm really interested in place. And when you write a series, which is what I do, and you set it all in the same place, it has a certain kind of character. But every place has a set of strengths and a set of limitations. And one of the great pleasures of writing this series, which each book is set in a different location. And so you get to you know, really develop each setting as a character. And it makes it both makes the books distinct from each other in a way that they wouldn't be necessarily if they were all set in Milwaukee, for example. But it helps me to direct the choices, to direct the story. So a story set in Memphis, which was my fourth book, is going to have a certain set of choices that are different from a story set in Iceland like this one.
Also, I couldn't help but think that the Iceland of my imagination, because I've not been there, it's on my bucket list, but the Iceland that I read about and the Iceland of my imagination mirrors Peter so well. There's like this sweeping dark with splashes of light and things happening and both cold and warm, and I thought, what a perfect place for him.
Well, it is, and it really pushes all of his buttons. It's especially in the wintertime, right? Peter has post-traumatic stress from his time in Iraq, and so he can't really be inside for very long. And in the winter in Iceland, you know, there's not a lot of outside to go to.
Not if you want to live.
Well, yeah, not if you want to be, you know, warm and above ground. And so, you know, again, it all kind of plays into, you know, giving Peter a set of challenges.
Well, and also giving him challenges that really test him. I mean, what I love about the sort of the arc and the sweep of the book is that he and Iceland kind of have some face-to-face chats, you know, more than once.
Yeah, there are some come to Jesus moments.
Yes.
And when you're somebody like I'm an outdoors guy. I've been a backpacker for 30 plus years. I would always generally rather be outside. That's something that Peter and I really have in common. But you know, there's a certain intensity and a certain rawness when you are out on a mountain or in the middle of a wood somewhere that you know it really is just you. And that's sort of part of the character of Peter as well. And certainly in this book, where Peter does not have his friends to rely on, and in part that's kind of his fault, his own choice. People always say to me, "So now, why do you have to be so hard on poor Peter?" And you know, that's kind of my job is to torture my character, is to tell a more interesting story.
Well, and to have them grow into some interesting places,
right,
and figure
right.
out things about themselves. Yeah, and I there was a very big Lewis-shaped hole at the very beginning of it. I thought, wait, Lewis isn't here. But I found that as the story went on, I would have liked to have seen how he reacted to all of it, but I also didn't miss him. I felt like the story, it was okay that he was in California with his family during this whole thing, and that June wasn't there either, although she was in his head the whole time for various reasons. But that, yeah, that whole support system just, it was okay.
Well, when you're in the middle of the dark night of your soul, you know, it doesn't really matter, you know, who you're with, you're alone. And that's kind of part of what I was trying to do with Peter, was to, you know, kind of have him hit bottom in a fairly profound way.
Yeah, it was a really interesting, for me, character study of him. I mean, they're all character studies of him, but I got to know him in different ways and deeper ways in this book.
Well, I'm glad you feel that way, because that was part of the goal as well, is to sort of strip away, you know, all of the tricks I have given myself over the last books, and to have this sort of just be Peter, kind of out on his own. And it honestly scared the hell out of me, the idea of doing something so elemental, past the point where I turned it in and I was waiting to hear what my editor had to say, and I still really had no idea, what he was going to say.
And what did he say?
he said, "Wow." It was actually kind of an astonishing experience, because he was a stand-in. My editor was on maternity leave, my usual editor, and so this is my temporary editor was the guy who discovered Tom Clancy. So he's kind of a giant in the industry. And I got fewer notes from him on this book than I have for any other book. It was really just, you know, clean up a little here, do a little of this somewhere else. It just kind of boggled my mind. And I basically said, so, you know, you're not just going easy on me because you just want to get this, you know, get this done with so I can start the next one. And he's like, no, if this needed work, you would know it. As a writer, it's always interesting because you spend so much time alone with the work. And at a certain point, you just can't see it anymore. You know, Margaret, my wife, reads parts of it. She'll often read the first big chunk to kind of say, okay, you're, you know, kind of on the right track. But really, nobody sees it until I send it off to my editor. And it's I'm holding my breath for a couple of weeks while I wait to hear.
Yeah, I bet. It's almost like this one was a dark night of the soul for you, too.
A little bit, yeah. You know, I had this spectacular mountain bike wipeout where I tore up my shoulder. I had to have surgery. The surgeon said that it was the kind of injury he generally sees with car accidents or hockey players. That
you really wiped out.
Oh no, I was moving fast.
It was a
very nice experience. But you know, and it kind of messed me up, and I was in bed for, you know, almost 2 weeks, and I told my agent, who is a certifiable piece of work, and her first words were, "Can you still type?"
Well, with one
maybe. No pressure.
Yeah,
no pressure.
None at all.
So, you know, and it was a challenge. There were you know, some other things going on as well. So, you know, some books are easier than others, and this was one of the others.
But I think it was worth the slog through the Slough of Despond, if we can, mix our metaphors here.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting that there was a point where I said to myself, you know, do I want to keep going with this, or do I want to start something else? And I really kind of went back and looked at it, and I just thought, I really like this story. I love writing about Iceland. There's something that is so compelling to me about the landscape. It's so primal. I don't know. I'm so glad I didn't cave. I'm so glad I didn't let myself weasel out and kept going.
Well, and I love your Icelandic characters too. There are a number of different ones that we meet along the way. Some are part of the family of the little boy and some not. I guess everyone's sort of related, kind of in some tangential way.
Well, in Iceland, everybody's sort of related as well.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean, that just because it's small.
Right.
And, you know, and somewhat self-contained. And so, but you captured that whole Nordic stoicism and just sort of practicality, but also just willingness to like throw it all out there and go when it's called for.
Well, it was actually one of the challenges was sort of, you know, when you don't, I don't speak Icelandic, and my experience there was limited. Duncan and I actually went twice, but it was still, you know, less than 3 weeks over the course of about 13 months. And it was hard to kind of figure out how to think about the Icelanders. And it really, when somebody said to me that Iceland is like the Wyoming of Europe, nobody recycles, there's all this open space, and that sort of helped because I've known a lot of people who live in places like Wyoming who are, you know, it's that self-reliance, and you're a little dwarfed by this gigantic, epic, ever-present landscape. And that really helped me, you know, sort of think about the people that I knew who had lived sort of, you know, on the last road, at the end of the last road. But it was so much fun to do, and this happens to me a lot, but, you know, some of these characters just kind of showed up. And it was like, oh, okay, so what do I do with this guy?
Who are you?
Yeah.
And why are you here? Okay,
right.
I guess we'll figure that
right.
out. Yeah. Well, in every book, there are always characters that I think, oh, I want to know what happened to that person, or I want to know the story of that person. You know, it's like I can see that if you were so inclined, you could write about that person, or you could write. And there were certainly a couple of people in this that I thought, you know, Bjarni was one, and I'm forgetting his name, the police captain.
Oh, Hjalmar.
Both of them. Both of them, and I thought, they could each have their own series.
Well, that's such a, to me, that's a giant compliment, because that's, to me, is the goal, is that you can imagine these characters having a life of their own somewhere else. I don't generally do book clubs because nobody actually reads the book in a book club, and it is my experience. But I did one for the first book, The Drifter, but years ago, and it was all women, and they had all read the book, and they all had very definite opinions about it. And at one point, I'm just sort of sitting in a chair watching, I don't know, 20 women argue about, well, Peter would do this or Peter would do that. And it was so wonderful to have this character have taken on sort of reality in the minds of these readers. So that is my goal in a way, and it's such a compliment to hear.
Well, I hope you do, because I kind of want to know what happens. I'm not going to give away the last time we see either of these guys, but they're in some interesting places, and I would love to. So maybe Peter goes back at some point.
Well, I'm wondering, at one point I get to go revisit some of the earlier characters. Mm-hmm. The thing about the series is there have so far really only been three recurring characters. There's Peter Ashe, his friend Lewis, and June Cassidy, who's his sweet patootie. And, you know, my goal is to sort of keep these books sort of lean and flexible so that I can go any place and write any kind of story I want to write. But at a certain point, it's fun for the reader, and it's also fun for me to kind of bring characters back to see, you know, where they are 3 years out or 5 years out. Going back to read, you know, some of my favorite series, right? Robert Crace, the Elvis Cole, Joe Pike books are wonderful. And there are characters that come back, you know, every X number of books. Robert Parker did that as well in the Spencer novels, which are also some of my favorites.
Yeah, and it's a wonderful thing. It's like seeing an old friend. For a reader,
right.
It's like, oh, hi, how are you?
Right.
You know, where have you been? What have you been doing?
Right.
And it's fun to see how they can kind of reunite in a new way. And so,
Yeah, it's like seeing someone you haven't seen for, you know, an old high school friend that you meet 10 years later.
Right.
It is a challenge, though. I never thought that first book would get published. So here I am, you know, the fifth book is coming out. I'm working on the sixth book, and I'm still kind of scratching my head that this whole thing is happening. But, you know, I never thought it would be a series, and now I'm you know, six books in and trying to figure out, what does it mean to write a series? You know, what does it look like? What's important to me? How do I want it to evolve? And if you look at, you know, I went back and thought about the series that had been really influential on me and the books that I had loved and had read over and over again. And there are so many different ways to write, you know, a long series of books. You kind of have to set a course and make some decisions. You know, do they age normally? Do they never age at all? You know, it's a hard, you know, given that I really had never thought about it at the beginning. It's an interesting challenge.
So, can you talk at all about where Peter is now, or are we going to wait until book six for that?
So it starts in Milwaukee. I can tell you that much, because that's about as far as I am. And I have a number of Milwaukee and Wisconsin readers who want to see Peter come back to Milwaukee. So there's the beginning right now. I should even tell you this, because I don't know if it's going
to. It might not be.
It's
that's
going
all right.
to evolve.
But for
it's
right now,
evolve. But for right now, it starts in the public market.
Perfect. Perfect.
There you go.
And then we'll get to talk to Lewis again too, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Because got to have Lewis.
No, Lewis is too much fun to leave out.
Well, Nick Petrie, as always, a great read. So wonderful to talk with you. And I look forward to chatting with you at Boswell on the 13th for the launch.
I'm very excited about that. Thank you so very much.
Milwaukee native Nick Petrie is the author of the very successful Peter Ashe series. The Wild One, which is the newest edition, will be released on January 14th. You can hear Nick and me in conversation about the book the evening of January 13th at Boswell Book Company. There's more information at wuwm.com.